97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
All right, welcome back. Sue is off this week. Carl is going to handle the Sue's News chores coming up here in just a couple of minutes. Did you tell me, because I'm confused, I know you said your daughter saw Black Widow.
Yes.
Were you there the other night or not?
I saw it at home just like you did.
Oh, but you have seen it at this
yes.
point. All right, and we're going to talk about it a little bit on Friday with Dan Buffa. I liked it.
It's
I
fine.
Did. I thought it was...
It's fine.
It's fine.
It's not that... Some people hate it. Some people love it. I'm right down the middle.
You've talked to... Because I don't think there's a score yet, is there, on Rotten Tomatoes?
I don't know.
I'll check. But who hated it?
I've heard people that saying, why is this here?
Really?
Yes.
You guys in your geeky Marvel world, right? That's probably what that's about.
More than likely.
Let's see if there's a score. I don't think there is a score yet. I was told there is no...
Well, because it doesn't open until the 9th.
They can't do a score until it opens, right?
There was an embargo until, I think, yesterday morning, so there's no embargo anymore. Yeah, that's
but
what
it,
I was told.
It doesn't even open for 9 days.
They're confident.
I did not think... Look, it's not... We'll talk about Friday. I don't think it's in the top tier of the Marvel movies.
It's middling.
I thought it was pretty good. You know, and I like Florence Pugh, who plays the sister here.
Yeah.
You get a little backstory, and then you're brought up to speed. This essentially... And help me here, Carl, because... I don't wear pocket protector and don't remember all these things, but this is set in the time span between Endgame and Infinity Wars, right?
No.
Infinity Wars and Endgame. No?
It's right after Civil War.
Oh.
Before Infinity War.
Before Infinity Wars.
So between the two wars.
Yeah. Does it really matter?
No, it doesn't.
It's just a superhero movie,
right? It doesn't matter.
And you get to look at Scarlett Johansson for a couple hours.
That director really likes butts.
Well, I like the... They did some joking around about... Mm-hmm. Those types of things Florence Pugh did. I thought it was pretty good.
Andrew, everybody.
But I really, really, I got to say this, believe it or not, I loved Boss Baby better than Black Widow.
Wow.
I know that's going to shock
some
people.
Dan's laughing at you.
Mark's favorite movie this year so far is Boss Baby.
That is not true.
Mitchell's versus the Machines.
It might be.
But here's what I was thinking about. Think about this last night, Carl. Some of the best movies that I've seen, Mitchell's versus the Machines and Boss Baby are two of the best movies that I've seen
Raya
this year.
Raya and the Last Dragon's great.
I would put Boss Baby a little ahead of Raya.
Dan is going to make fun of you. He's already texted me, you know that Reardon loved Boss
but
Baby?
But he didn't see it yet, did he?
I don't know if he did or not.
I loved it. I mean, I really did.
My wife wants to
make fun of me. Like, she was texting me yesterday. She loved it, too.
Mitchell's was very good, though.
Yeah,
Mitchell's
it was very
the
good.
Machine was
Mitchell's is better than this movie, but it's... Okay, just don't write off Boss Baby.
Are we allowed to talk about Black Widow on Friday?
I just told you there's no embargo. You get all worked up about these things. Yeah, I checked
into it. I
don't
want to get
my
hands
slapped. We can talk
about
whatever I want. If I'm going to say good things about, again, if a movie studio wants to clamp down on me for saying good things about their movie, that's their problem.
This is the Mark Reardon Show on 97.1 FM Talk.
You guys know that I wasn't going to play that one. That was
no.
It seems like the Sue's News bed is in a different place every day. So
that could be.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say the...
Okay, good. Because I thought I pressed the button there yesterday. How about this? Oh, no, that's the bed only.
That's the bed only.
God.
Every time I look at that, for some reason, that screen that you have, that particular one, every time I look at it,
Two strikes.
Does seem to be a bit different.
Okay, in my defense, it does change a little bit. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Andrew also doesn't throw anything away. As you can see, you have 17 different audio pages.
That might be low. He would have 100-something if I didn't. I do delete some of them.
He knows that I go back. He's learned from my request because I go back to audio quite a bit.
But if you went back more than 5 days, it wouldn't matter because they only say five days.
Yeah. So Carl's right.
Can I try this again here?
Yeah.
Let's see. Take three.
These allegations are deeply concerning.
Does the president have any comment?
We're not going to comment.
It's not clear messaging.
No.
And now, Sue's News.
Uh-huh.
Brought to you by Sue.
Not today. Do we care that Bill Cosby's out of jail?
Well, we did touch on that earlier in the show.
But Smallville alum Allison Mack did get sentenced for 3 years in jail. So one molester in, one molester out.
What happened with that case? I saw
she was
a
part of the Nexum deal. She was the one. She was recruiting young girls to go be a part of that cult.
That's disgusting.
It is.
Yeah.
And she got 3 years today. So Bill Cosby is out of jail. Allison Mack is in jail.
Here's what I guess I would like to say. I covered the Bill Cosby thing at the beginning of the show. I think it is news. We explained why the Supreme Court in Pennsylvania decided to throw out the conviction. There's not going to be another trial. But I don't really want to give any more attention to Bill Cosby. I looked up here. We have a monitor where they were showing not too long ago. You know, they did a live shot on his car as it left prison. Mm-hmm. They're tracking him as he crawls out of the car with his walker or whatever. I don't want to hear about him anymore.
Okay, we're done.
There you go. We're done.
A new study reveals the city with the worst traffic is no longer Los Angeles, California. Would you all like to take guesses, Fred?
New York City.
Chicago.
Atlanta.
Andrew?
Atlanta.
According to Texas A&M's Transportation Institute, Newark, New Jersey is now the worst traffic in the area.
Well, that makes sense because, you know, Fred says New York. Manhattan is weird because have to pay. They don't want cars there. They make you pay a high toll if you're coming from Brooklyn or somewhere else. So they try to keep as few cars in Manhattan as possible. But Jersey is where a lot of people live, right?
And they do. And so this also includes Newark is far more congested than New York because they're trying to keep cars out. But it also does include the New York greater metropolitan area.
Yeah, it's just jammed up. But L.A. traffic is just ridiculous. I mean, I've driven more in L.A. on my own. I've never driven really in New York on my own. I've never rented a car, come to think of it. But in L.A. I have.
But you don't need to.
No, you don't.
I wonder what the average time of commute is in L.A.
I thought it was an hour.
I was going to say, I know it takes, for my brother who lives out there, I know it takes him like an hour to get across
anywhere.
Town.
Yeah. I have about a 14-minute commute.
Same.
What about you, Mark?
28 minutes.
Carl?
I'm about 15.
Andrew?
50. But I also...
He lives in the IL.
Yeah, I have never hit traffic in this city. The time that I leave, I just, like, my work times, I just avoid all the traffic. I just happen to live far away.
This is post-COVID, though, Fred. When I used to work until 5 o'clock on the AM dial before COVID, it would take me at least 50 minutes, probably. Wow. 44. Ooh.
But then when also you were working from home, it took you seconds.
Yeah, I know. That was big. That was the average commute time, if we do that for the last year, is about 7 minutes.
Wow. A man jumped from a moving plane at LAX, speaking of Los Angeles, tells the FBI he bought a lot of crystal meth before he got on the flight. A lot of crystal meth. I don't know how much a lot. Oh, it's $20 worth.
Is that a lot?
I guess.
Okay. And what did he do? He was hanging off the wing of the plane?
He ran to the front of the plane, banged on the cockpit door, and then made his way out the emergency exit, fell out, broke his leg.
Okay, how do we not have video of this? We have video of every other idiot on a plane that is punching a flight attendant or something like that. How do we not have this glorious video?
I don't know, because...
Find it.
I'm going to look after we're done. Man has some free time on his hands. Told the FBI he drank a lot of beer, did $20 worth of meth while staying in a hotel in downtown Los Angeles, then went to the airport, and he was smoking meth on and off for the day before as well.
On and
that
off.
Sounds a little bit more than $20 worth, but
on and off makes me laugh in that context because, like,
he doesn't know what time it is.
Well, and I feel like if you do it like once, isn't your whole day shot? Like, can you, like,
I don't know.
I can't speak on from that experience.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I was kind of on and off with meth over the past day.
TLC has canceled Counting On, the last show that they were showing about the Duggars. Are you familiar with these 19 and counting people?
Well, I'm only familiar with them because they were in the news for many years, but I have no interest in the Duggars.
Aren't they like all criminals now?
Well, they arrested Josh Duggar, and therefore TLC.
Is that one of the kids? One of the original kids?
I didn't watch any of these Duggars.
You know, when that whole thing came out, and then they were on the Today Show, remember they would have another baby, and I remember calling them pretty creepy at the time. I thought the whole thing was creepy.
They had 19 kids.
But people, well, at that time they didn't have 19, but everyone, I remember people coming down on me because I was critical of a family just trying to have, no, they were creepy, and it's been borne out that they're creepy.
Yes, and like a lot of them are in jail, and a lot of them have done weird, crazy things, but TLC is no longer airing any of their shows, which is good. The NSA has put out a rare statement. NSA has a Twitter feed, and they rarely tweet. They have put out a rare statement saying that they are not spying on Tucker Carlson.
All right, and I never even really got into this whole deal with Tucker Carlson because he has accused the NSA of...
And the Biden administration.
Right, of trying to look into things related to his life.
Which they did not even mention on any other show but his. Because you'd think that they would lead off with that with Fox and Friends the next morning. No other show but Tucker Carlson has mentioned this show.
Well, I don't know about that. That's not unusual, just because when you have Hannity and Tucker doing their thing, they don't always follow. I think what's unusual is that, and maybe they have, that CNN hasn't led with it for hours, because you would think that they would.
The tweet says, "This allegation is untrue. Tucker Carlson has never been an intelligence target of the agency, and the NSA has never had any plans to try to take his program off the air."
Now, the problem is that there's not a lot of faith and confidence in some of these government agencies being truthful. So a lot of people aren't going to believe that.
And finally, on Carl's news in place of Sue, TV news crew was reporting on a crime spike. Then reporters demanded that they hand over their camera. They were outside Oakland, California, interviewing an official about the spike in violent crime when they became victims of the violent crime. The official was saying to the NBC Bay Area reporter, "I think Oakland deserves better," before two armed men interrupted the interview, knocked the camera to the ground. But then the news crew security guard, who had a weapon, ordered the robbers to leave. And the police said they left without any equipment. No one was hurt.
Wait a second here. I thought you said, was your lead into this that they were trying to grab the tapes or something like that? Did I hear that wrong?
They were just trying to rob them.
Okay, I thought what you were saying is that the cops were trying to, after that happened, trying to cover it up and say that it didn't happen. That was not the case.
That was not the case.
That was that happened to one of our people down in Ferguson. They were covering the Ferguson protests and...
Yeah.
Do you remember that, Ben? Somebody hit him in the face and took his camera.
Ben Vogelsang was working in our digital department at the time.
It's a dangerous world out there. That is Carl's News, ladies and gentlemen, brought to you this afternoon by Carl. And we appreciate that. We'll talk. Are you going to be here Friday when we talk movies, by the way? All right. So we'll kind of match all those things up. The release this week, though, is The
Zola.
Purge. Well, it's The Purge, too, isn't it?
The Purge Forever, Forever Purge, I think is what it's called. But I saw Zola, which was, if you've read that Twitter feed, it's amazing. And the movie, it lives up.
Yeah, explain the story. I don't know if a lot of people know what this is about.
It is a stripper from Detroit who tweeted a 158 long tweet thread about a trip that she took to Florida with another stripper. And... mayhem, drugs, prostitution. It's a world that we don't live in, and it's just how...
Speak for yourself, but
well,
sure.
It's just so fantastic that you can't believe it, but she says it's a true story. And they did a Rolling Stone article about it, and they have now made a movie out of it, starring Elvis's granddaughter.
Oh, yeah, I think you were mentioning that the other day. All right, so we'll have Buffett in, Carl, on Friday afternoon. I mentioned tomorrow. Did you hear me talking about Sean O'Connell from Real Blend tomorrow afternoon?
No, you didn't tell.
So this is Sean is a fellow Critics' Choice member, and he and a bunch of other guys, when Once Upon a Time came out, they latched on to Tarantino, and Tarantino welcomed them in with open arms and did a podcast with them. So he wrote a book, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, about the movie that is just coming out. And they did a big book signing, and he invited these guys from the Critics' Choice. They're fellow critics from across the country. I think Sean's in D.C., Jake Hamilton in Chicago, and I think there's one or two others. And they did the book signing event, and then he did like a two-hour
QT
interview
showed
with them.
Up?
Yeah. He did it in a two-hour Q&A afterwards.
Well, that's like one question with him.
Well, I joked about that earlier because it was the only time I interviewed Tarantino. It was for Inglourious Basterds. And honestly, I may have asked two, but I'm pretty sure it was one question. He went on for about 4.5 minutes, and then they said, okay, time to wrap up.
But I only asked one question.
Man, he was fascinating, though. He's just got this, he's just this ball of weird
energy.
Yep, that's what he is, Quentin Tarantino. 422. Hey, Scott Jennings is like that, too. He's a Reardon Show insider, CNN political contributor, former special assistant to President Bush and Mitch McConnell. He's coming up next.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Well, I mentioned Greene County. The Springfield area is getting hit with the Delta variant, but I still wonder if this stuff is overblown or how serious it is. We're going to check in down there in just a few minutes with Aaron Shakur, who's with the health department. And we're hearing that some of the patients have been even sent here to St. Louis, so we'll find out. Scott Jennings is with me this afternoon. Reardon Show insider, CNN political contributor, former special assistant to President Bush and Mitch McConnell, huge Cardinals fan. Jennings, how are you?
Mr. Reardon, I'm good. Good to be with you, sir.
It appears as if the St. Louis Cardinals, your favorite baseball team and mine, have won three games in a row all of a sudden. Now, it's against the Diamondbacks. Does it even count? But still, baby steps, Scott, baby steps.
Yeah, and we got a good starting pitching outing today from Kim, who also had a double and a couple of RBIs. And so, it was a good, it's been a good couple of days. But, yeah, it's the Diamondbacks. And eventually we got to play people like the Giants and the Dodgers and the Cubs and the Brewers. And we've just really fallen short against better teams. But maybe this is part of a turnaround. Hope springs eternal.
Scott and our mutual friend Joe Arnold were in town a couple of weeks ago, and you had a couple of your kids with you, and we got to hang out. It was fun. It wasn't quite – that was like the week it went to full capacity at Busch Stadium, and it wasn't quite full capacity, was it?
No, it wasn't. We did see two walk-off wins in a row, which was pretty remarkable against the Marlins. Those are those wins that Mike Schilt really wants everybody to focus on. He keeps saying, well, we beat the Marlins, and we were there, and then, of course, it got worse from there.
But, yeah, by the way, those were the last, I think before these three, those were the last two victories we almost pretty much had outside of Wainwright's.
I know. Thank God for Adam Wainwright this year. He's been old faithful, old reliable.
All right, you sat down, this made a little bit of news, at the Kentucky Chamber of Commerce. One of your former bosses was the now Minority Leader Mitch McConnell. You had a chance to sit down with him, and was it moderating an event yesterday with Senator McConnell?
Yeah, I hosted a public conversation with him. So he and I do this from time to time where I interview him in public, and he talks about certain topics. So, yeah, we had a good chat yesterday.
So what was the question that you asked him? Because there's this desert island thing that's kind of getting out there on the media. What was the question?
I said, we had about a minute left, and I said, well, I've got a lightning round type question for you. If you were stranded on a desert island and you could pick a companion, who would it be of these four people? Jimmy Carter, Bill Clinton, Barack Obama, or Joe Biden?
Ooh. What was the answer?
He immediately ruled out Jimmy Carter, which prompted me to say, of course, well, he's the only one that can build you any shelter.
That's true.
And then he sort of glossed over Clinton a little bit, and he talked a little bit about Obama and his interactions, and he finally settled on Biden and talked about how they've been friends and known each other a long time. So it sort of reaffirmed what I thought what his answer would be, which is that he would pick the guy that he had the longest and best relationship with. Although I still think Carter, you know, it could whip up a few houses, and you might, and who knows what kind of housing development you might put up there.
You know, that you raise a good point there on his ability to perhaps provide shelter. That might be the choice right there. Did he offer anything else on what's happening in Washington right now with infrastructure? We could talk about that just a little bit. It seemingly has gone back and forth, and I don't know who has the advantage or upper hand right now.
Well, he did, and he reaffirmed that he wants an outcome on infrastructure, and he wants it to be bipartisan. He doesn't want to, break the bank, but he thinks we do need a bipartisan infrastructure plan that meets actual infrastructure objectives, roads, bridges, highways, airports, and seaports. And I think he believes that there can be an outcome. What he doesn't want, and he reaffirmed this, is there to be any linkage between that kind of a bipartisan, broadly accepted deal and some sort of hyperpartisan budget reconciliation, $6 trillion Bernie Sanders fantasy land wish list. And he is not going to commit to putting Republicans in a position of saying, well, we can only get one with the other. And that's where Biden, I think, derailed things last week, tried to get him back on the rails. And he sort of did. But then today, Nancy Pelosi has said, totally ignoring Biden, said that, oh, yeah, we look forward to doing these things together. And so I think there's a disconnect, frankly, between the Biden White House and the Democrat leaders of the House and the Senate on how to handle, frankly, the progressives in the Democratic Party on these issues.
It sounds like that because there's been a little bit back and forth. So I don't know what the end game will be. Is there a realistic timetable for this as it keeps dragging on?
I think the very optimistic timetable on infrastructure would be possibly it gets onto the Senate floor in July. The more realistic timetable for all of this would be sometime in the fall after the August recess. I think they're farther down the road on infrastructure than they are budget reconciliation. But again, the wheels of government turn slowly. So my bet would be fall.
Hey, Jennings, our vice president, finally got to the border. Did you see that?
Well, she got close to the border, Mark. She got near the border, went to El Paso, which, by the way, is not where the problem is. The problem is on the border in the Rio Grande River Valley.
Oh, details, and, details, schmetails. Come on.
It was a photo op. She was on her way home to California. She stopped off for a photo op. And I tell you, Biden has put this on her plate, and it is going to be – this is going to be a big issue in the midterms. If she wants to be the nominee in 24, they got a real problem on their hands. You know, Harris had gone to Central America and said, do not come. Do not come to the United States. Well, then she goes to El Paso and meets with a congresswoman who says on the tarmac in front of Air Force Two, welcome to the new Ellis Island. And so talk about mixed messages from the Democrats on the immigration issue. Do they want to have an open border? Or do they want border security? I can't quite tell.
So you were on, and I never played the audio of this because we were trying to get you on last week, and then we just had some confusion. But there's this Theodore Roosevelt statue, which is in front of the American Museum of Natural History in New York. I've seen this statue. It features Teddy Roosevelt on horseback, and you have a Native American next to him on his right and an African man on his left. So that has been deemed politically incorrect, and they want to tear that statue down or rip it out of the front of the museum?
That's right. Last summer, the museum actually said they wanted the city to take it away, and then a couple of weeks ago, the city of New York decided to take it away. And so they've canceled Teddy Roosevelt's famous equestrian statue from the front of the museum, to which he made many personal contributions, and his father helped build. And I just thought, you know, when this whole statue business started, they said, oh, don't worry, it's just the Confederate statues. And I actually agreed with that. You know, I don't think we need Confederate statues really either. But then it became, well, let's take down the statue of Lincoln and Grant. Oh, now Washington, let's take him down. Now it's Teddy Roosevelt. Then this week, Mark, a group looking at the rotunda in the National Archives building in Washington says the Founding Fathers and the rotunda. That whole scene is racist and needs to be done away with as well. And so we've gone well beyond the idea of canceling Confederate statues, and now it's people like Teddy Roosevelt, who was one of the most progressive presidents in our country's history. And I just find all this to be totally obscene and in the pursuit of a whole bunch of people who frankly want to erase American history and cancel sort of our connection to our founders, their principles, and the people who upheld those principles who came after. And I was really upset about it. I'm a member of that museum. I've decided not to renew my membership. I used to take my family there all the time, and I'm just going to sit it out for a while. Why would a history museum take part in erasing American history?
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense. And you mentioned the rotunda. That's an important issue. So they're deeming it structural racism because it lauds wealthy white men in the nation's founding while marginalizing BIPOC. That's Black, Indigenous, and other people of color, women and other communities. So you can't get anything right these days. They're going to go after that. Now, I haven't talked to you about some of these things with critical race theory and even Gwen Berry that came up. What's your opinion on Gwen Berry, the Olympic athlete who turned her back on the flag? She's a St. Louisan. Did you know that?
I did not know that. I mean, I don't know much about her other than, of course, what she wanted us to know, which was her pursuit, I'm sure, of a lucrative deal from Nike or some such. Because I guess this is how you get one these days, is by attacking America. I mean, my opinion is if she doesn't want to represent America or she's embarrassed by America, she doesn't have to do that. But I'm hopeful that the two people who actually got first and second in the hammer throw get ultimately more attention because they clearly love our country and they want to represent our country. And I'm for them. And I hope they are very successful in Tokyo.
So you and I haven't really talked and had discussions. I've been having a lot of discussions about critical race theory. Chris Rufo was on my show a long time ago when he sort of started off some of these investigations. I think it's a really, really important issue. Now, I also understand that by its very definition, CRT may not technically be being taught currently in schools, although I think there certainly is indoctrination that's going on. But of course, you're on CNN with people, and the other side is just going to say, oh, here we go again. This is just Republicans. They don't want anyone to learn real history, Scott. And this is an interesting, you know, issue for me because I'm seeing parents, moms get involved, people who, not unlike last year when, you know, you had shutdowns and lockdowns and youth sports were affected, people who ordinarily might not get involved with political issues, they're getting active.
Yeah, I think this is really brewing under the surface. I don't think the Democrats understand how big of a deal school issues in general are going to be in the next election. Critical race theory curriculum, which is happening despite what people want you to believe. And also just the whole concept of how the schools were closed. They weren't reopened. The union's role and all that. And I just think there's a lot of education issues that are going to come up and be a big part of the midterm. This critical race theory issue, Republicans, suburban moms, you know, people, like you said, who aren't generally involved in politics are on fire about this because they don't want their children to go to school and be told that they are racist, that they are inherently bad, that they are inherently rotten at the core, and that they are oppressing their friends who are sitting next to them in these classrooms. They don't like it. They know it's wrong, and they are being active about this issue, and they're not going to be silenced. And so I suspect this is going to continue to be hot as we head into the fall and schools reopen around the country.
What's important here, and this is where I would encourage your influence because you're a smart guy and you talk to some of these Republicans, it's incumbent upon Republicans to really kind of be armed with good information here because they're going to have questions and more questions that they ordinarily would have, and they have to have examples and, you know, be armed with good information so people listen, because the media is going to be overwhelmingly against you on this. Joanne Reed is already spreading things that aren't true, but because of the definitions and the word games that they like to play, they end up winning, at least with the coverage in the mainstream media.
Yeah, I wrote a column about this about a month ago, actually, and there was an example, one of the best ones from Nevada, where a high school kid with an African-American mother and a white father is a mixed racial heritage, but legitimately is African-American in some heritage, was told in a classroom that he had to stand up and admit to being an oppressor and admit. And he looked white, I guess, and his friends sort of treated him that way. But his teacher was trying to force him to say in front of, you know, the class that he was oppressing them. And he refused to do it. There was a big back and forth, and they threatened him. They threatened to fail him. They threatened to flunk him out of high school. They threatened his college future. His mom took him to court. Ultimately, they prevailed in court, thank God. But this is an example of what's going on in these schools where kids are being made to stand up and say things out loud that they don't know, they don't believe, that aren't true. That's part of the curriculum.
That mom was on my show, awesome. Scott. And look, you have – it's interesting to me because I've had some examples around here. Some of the most vocal critics of critical race theory are these families that have mixed race members, because I think they're more outraged than some of the rest of us.
Absolutely. And I mean, in this particular case, you had the curriculum, but then the school doubling down and threatening the kid with failure, threatening him, his ability to even get into college. And so it was so ingrained in the culture at that school that they were willing to throw a kid's entire future away over it. Yeah, it's pretty bad. And that's why parents, I think, are so worried about, you know, once it takes root inside of a school system, it's hard to rip out. And that's why parents, I think, are fighting so hard.
Scott Jennings, always appreciated. So just to give folks a little backstory here, about a year ago, more than a year ago, Jennings and the aforementioned Joe Arnold were going to fill in for me for a week on KMOX. It was all set. Then the pandemic struck and I didn't take a vacation. So I've got another vacation coming up here. I'm trying to get you guys in here. Have you had conversations with my boss, Steve Moore? Because we need bench strength, and I think you guys would be awesome.
I promise you that I would be better off this radio bench than Matt Carpenter is off the Cardinal bench. I will hit better than 175 as a fill-in radio host. I can assure you of that. I promise.
I have full confidence, and I don't know if the hitting coach is to blame here or what, but we got to get you guys on. So I'm working on it. You stay patient. Scott, have a great 4th of July weekend. We'll talk soon.
Okay, thanks, Mark.
Brad Young, who has been filling in a little bit here on 97.1, is going to join me in the next hour to talk about the lawsuits relating to the Surfside condo collapse. Also, Braden Busek, who, and this is going to be an interesting case, he's the director of litigation for the Southeastern Legal Foundation, and they're filing a lawsuit representing a teacher in the Evanston-Skokie, Illinois school district near Chicago for discrimination against whites. This is critical race theory teaching for teachers. It wasn't in students' classrooms, but it was in training for teachers. The lawsuit's fascinating. We'll get to that here after the top of the hour. We've heard that Greene County, the Springfield area, Southwest Missouri, is getting hit hard with the new variant with COVID. So we thought we'd check in with Aaron Shikora. He's down in Greene County, the Springfield Greene County Health Department. Hey, Aaron, how are you this afternoon?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
So what is the current situation right now in your neck of the woods down there in Springfield, Greene County?
Yeah, so we're seeing a significant spike in new COVID-19 cases the last few weeks, in particular this week. We had started to see a decline in our new cases as our vaccination rates started to increase. But right around the time that our vaccinations started to kind of flatten off, we did start seeing over 100 cases per day, and the last few days over 150. Yesterday we had 177 new cases. We're kind of averaging about 127 cases per day the last 7 days. You know, at the beginning of this month, we were significantly lower than that, and significantly lower than that in May.
So if we're talking about 177 new cases yesterday, are we talking about serious cases? Are these people who are landing in the hospital? Can you give us any breakdown along those lines with just the percentage of these patients that are coming in? Because obviously there's a chance you can get a positive test if you've been vaccinated and you really don't have any symptoms.
Yeah, so I actually misspoke. We actually have 177 people today that are hospitalized.
Got it. All right. That makes more sense. Right.
Yes. And we are seeing kind of numbers on the same level, 171 new cases from yesterday. So I was a little off. But we are seeing quite a few of those individuals who are being hospitalized. An overwhelming majority of those that are hospitalized are not vaccinated. We do have some breakthrough cases, which is going to happen, but most of those have not been severe.
I know that maybe this isn't your area of expertise, but we've seen some coverage, of course, in other media where people are ending up in the hospital on ventilator, they're unvaccinated, and one of the things they say is, gosh, I wish I was vaccinated.
Yeah, we are seeing some folks that are kind of expressing some regret and not having been vaccinated because they know that while they still may have contracted the virus, they likely would not be in the hospital, they would not be in the ICU, they would not be on a ventilator.
Do you know then specifically a breakdown of Delta variant cases versus other strains or not?
So since it's a sample, we don't know exactly how many are Delta variant, but I can say that we are seeing a significant number of those samples that are pulled and tested, that are sequenced to figure out if it's a variant or not, are the Delta variant. It's become the predominant variant here in Greene County, probably in Southwest Missouri, and it's a significant portion. So it's definitely a contributing factor to that increase in spread.
Do you know what the vaccination rate is in your area?
Yeah, we go off of 12 and up, and right now we're sitting at almost 39%. So, you know, not quite high enough.
If you would, just for argument's sake, if you would take the 12 to 25 out of there, would you be higher in theory?
We would be a little higher. We're seeing lower vaccination rates among those that are under the age of 30, and we've been trying to reach that population with some of our outreach and some of our education, and it's especially important now that we are seeing that average age of the people hospitalized start to decline. We're seeing younger people be hospitalized with severe illness.
We had heard, I don't know if you can confirm this, that maybe you can just kind of answer the question this way. Are local hospitals full? Are they filling up? And are you diverting any patients here to the St. Louis area?
So I can only go off what I've heard, and I have heard that one of our two hospital systems did divert, I believe, 4 patients yesterday. I've not had an update today. As of yesterday, our other hospital was not transferring patients, but regardless, both are very overwhelmed, I think, with new cases and with severe illness like we hadn't seen for months. So it's unfortunate that we're kind of back to our putting that much strain on our healthcare system.
Aaron Shakur is with me. He's with the Springfield Greene County Health Department. Can you give me any sense of how Branson is affected here? They're in a different county. That's Taney County, right? But there's crossover. Obviously, you're in the same area. Are they experiencing some of the same issues there?
You know, I'm really not sure specifically about the Branson area. I do know that Southwest Missouri in general is kind of being hit hard by this Delta variant. And I think every county in Southwest Missouri is not does not have a high enough vaccination rate. We're starting to see some success with our outreach efforts here locally, and we do kind of work on a regional level, coordinating with the other health departments in the area to try and encourage more people to get vaccinated. So we are starting to see a little bit of an uptick in vaccinations. I think we vaccinated 3,300 people last week. So we're making progress. That progress is slow, and we kind of had a decline, in May, but people are starting to see that getting vaccinated is going to be the best way to move forward.
Well, obviously, that's part of your role at the health department is to get the message out. But is there any way to gauge how what's happening in your part of Missouri is being digested by the folks in your county. In other words, I took calls yesterday on this show from people mainly who are unvaccinated, sort of trying to explain to me why they're unvaccinated, because I think they should be vaccinated. Different people have different reasons. But is there a way to gauge reaction? Are you seeing more interest in a vaccine because of your numbers, or is that not manifesting itself at this point?
Just purely looking at numbers, you know, we can't say for sure it's because of the situation, but we are starting to see our outreach events that we're having all across the county at libraries and parks, fire stations, breweries and things like that, where we're going out and vaccinating people where they already are. We are starting to see an uptick in attendance at those. So, it would be fair to assume that that's because the situation is getting worse and people are making it a priority that maybe were indifferent.
Awesome. Aaron, thank you for the information this afternoon. Keep an eye on things from here in St. Louis. So I appreciate it.
Of course. Thank you.
I don't know what the takeaway is, especially for those of you who called yesterday and said you were not going to get vaccinated, because clearly there are people that are being hospitalized that are not vaccinated. It's not too hard to break this down right now. The people who are vaccinated are safe. And by the way, the CDC director even came down today. There was this news yesterday about still masking. And some of this is because of the World Health Organization, which has become a joke. But they're recommending masking regardless of vaccination status. Walensky comes out today, and this is even Rochelle Walensky, and she's been questionable on some of the guidance. She clarified that nothing has changed in the CDC's view. The vaccinated, we believe, are still safe, and that's even including the Delta variant. So keep that in mind. Get vaccinated. 455, 97.1 FM Talk.
Get more at 97.1talk.com.